Welcome to The Scrub Life, a podcast for and about the incredible profession of surgical technology. I'm Chris Blevins, and our mission at The Scrub Life is to educate the public about surgical technology. Each episode dives into the wonderful world of surgery, where we inform and hopefully entertain our listeners while interviewing amazing individuals within the field and presenting the hot topics everyone wants to know more about. Certified surgical technologists are an integral part of the sterile team that cares for patients in the operating room. Learn more about this exciting field, the immense effort that goes into educating future CSTs, and how you too can become a ninja of the OR. Now, without further ado, here's the latest episode of The Scrub Life. Hey, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Scrub Life podcast. I'm Chris Blevins, and tonight I have my amazing podcaster in crime, Stephanie Austin. So, Stephanie, thank you for joining me tonight.
Yes, thanks, Chris, for having me again.
Absolutely. So we know that, you know, gosh, it's April. In May, many of our programs are graduating. Our high school seniors are starting to graduate high school and trying to decide, gosh, what is the next step in their journey? And so with those things being in mind, we thought this would be a perfect opportunity for us to do an episode that could be used by programs, high school, you know, health occupations, teachers. We can just think of so many people that could use this episode specifically just to inform people about what it is surgical technology education looks like and what kind of a day in the life of a surgical technologist is. So that is going to be the short and sweet of it for this particular episode. And our hope is that you all, you know, it's concise and very informative, and you all can take this episode and share it virtually. Unfortunately, COVID is still a thing. And so obviously we're not as, I think, physically present in high schools and at kind of those career fairs and things that we're used to being present in. And so maybe this can be kind of a tool in the toolbox, right? To share. So what do you think, Stephanie? You want to get started?
Let's do it.
All right. All right, Stephanie. So let's say someone has chosen surgical technology as their next step once they've either graduated high school or maybe as a second career. We've both had students that have been quite successful doing that. So what happens when someone is accepted into a surgical technology program? What does that look like?
Well, it's a little bit different for every program, but basically what happens is once they're accepted into the program, they will start classroom work. And with that classroom work, typically during the day at some point, maybe not every day, but usually once or twice a week, they are in lab to learn the hands-on skills that they would need for the profession. And not only do they take the surgical technology courses, but they also are required to take any general education courses that they have not completed when they are accepted into the program. So their day could look, you know, very different from the person sitting next to them. They may get through with their classes, their surg tech classes, and then have to go to another general education class.
And when we say general education, we mean like usually there's a math component, an English yes. component, some elective in sociology or psychology or philosophy, right?
Right. Yeah.
So those more broader subjects that could be transferred anywhere, right?
Right. And some of your community colleges, like where I teach, they take college level anatomy and physiology that are not incorporated into the program. And, you know, so it just looks different depending on the school that they're mm-hmm. actually going to.
Yeah. So if you are going to go to school for surgical technology, then there's specific schools that are allowed And we find that out through our accrediting body, right?
Correct. Yes. And those programs have, they have met the standard for the accreditation, which means that they are teaching the minimum standards that are expected for entry-level surgical technologists to maintain and to
right. Which is really important because, yes. You know, there is a right and wrong way to do pretty much everything that we do in surgery.
Exactly.
And so we need to make sure that, you know, those students are learning the right way. And our, for surgical technology specifically, it's the ARC-STSA, which is the Accreditation Review Council for Surgical Technology and Surgical Assisting. So you must go to one of those accredited schools in order to make sure that you are qualified to sit for the certification exam. And you can find those accredited programs by going to www.arcstsa.org.
Correct.
They have an entire list of all of the programs, and I believe there's over 250 across the nation now.
Right, there right? is.
Yeah. And these, I know we are, once you get initial accreditation, you must continue to maintain those standards. And so therefore, you know, we have those site visits. You, my friend, are a site visitor.
Yes.
We'll have to talk about what that looks like at another episode, but absolutely. So you're going to go to this surgical technology program. You've applied, you've finished your prerequisites. You are taking both your gen ed courses and your surgical technology courses. And then after that, yes, we must complete a lab because as I've said before, there's not a patient out there that deserves to be our guinea pig. So we have True. To make sure that you understand sterile technique. That is incredibly important. It is kind of the bread and butter of what we do. So once we've done that, then all of our accredited programs also have a clinical requirement, right?
Yes, they do. And, you know, you will actually go into the hospital as a student. You will be with a preceptor in the operating room. They will guide you through the process of preparing for the surgery. Mm-hmm. They're going to walk you through ensuring that you have all the supplies and equipment needed for the procedure. And then they're going to stand there with you and be your backup while you're performing the duties of a surgical technologist, That's passing right. instruments to the surgeon, holding retractors, just depends on, you know, which part of our profession you're working with that day, you know, and, but they're not going to let you fail. That's right. the cool part about it. They're there to ensure your success and to make sure that you do not harm the patient.
Yes, it takes a village to take care of our patients, and we are all there for the patient. And although, yes, you must maintain a certain skill set prior to getting to the hospital, that instrumentation that you've spoken about, our supplies and the various equipment that we use, most importantly, though, is the complete understanding of sterile technique, not just how to stay sterile, but also how to correct or first of all, identify breaks in sterile technique, and then how to critically think your way through to correct those mistakes so that we don't harm our patient, right?
Yes, and that's what we specialize in.
It is.
Is yes. aseptic technique and ensuring that our patients do not develop a post-operative infection because of something that we did.
That's correct. And then, so there are, clinical is not just kind of a few days a week and you're there all day. There are specific requirements throughout the clinical, I guess, rotation, if you will. And we have to have a certain amount of surgical specialties. And then, of course, a minimum amount of cases per surgical specialty in the what we call the first scrub role. And so will you tell our listeners what the difference, I'm sure we've used it kind of just casually when we've done other episodes, what first scrub versus second scrubbing is. Do you mind going into some detail about that, Stephanie?
No, I don't mind at all. The first scrub is the surgical technologist that goes in and sets up the case, prepares mm-hmm. all the instruments, all the supplies, and then they assist the doctor sometimes the doctor preps, sometimes the RN preps, sometimes the surgical tech does the prep.
Right.
And what that is they put an antiseptic on the area where they're going to make the incision.
Mm-hmm.
And then we drape, and the surgical, the first scrub, and usually the second scrub will assist with that.
Mm-hmm.
They'll get the drapes on, and then the first scrub will pull all of the Mayo stand, the different equipment, everything will be pulled up to the field.
Yeah.
And they pass the instruments to the surgeon. They're responsible for maintaining a visual of their instrumentation, of their sponges. Nice. Yes. And they're responsible for the surgical counts. And that's important because, you know, we count in the beginning, we count when we start to close the incision, and that's to ensure that we haven't left anything in. And then we do a final count just to make sure again that we haven't left anything in the patient.
Souvenirs are bad in the operating room.
Souvenirs are very bad.
Yes. And then of course the second scrub role, you can tell that by what Stephanie was saying, the first scrub role of a surgical technologist is very active, very hands-on, yes, almost the lead technologist for that particular procedure. But the second scrub is kind of a secondary role, background. Maybe they weren't as active in setting up the case, or they were not as present during the beginning of the case, but during the case, they most of the time they are in an assistive role to the first scrub surgical technologist, or they are holding retractors. Or assisting in just helping the surgeon be able to view the anatomy that we're operating on, right? Because if you can't see it, you can't operate on it.
Exactly. And that role changes based on the type of procedure you're doing.
Yeah.
If you're doing an open procedure, meaning that you can see directly into the human body, then, you know, you may be holding retractors or, you know, using the suction, different things like that. Whereas if you're doing a laparoscopic case, you may be the one that is what we call you may be driving the camera.
Yes.
And that allows the surgeon to see while he's operating.
Absolutely. And our students during their clinical rotation, they must have a minimum of 120 surgical cases. 30 of those must be in the first scrub role that we've just described in general surgery. And general surgery is basically anything from the neck to the hips, anything in our, you know, thorax or abdominopelvic area. Of course, you know, there are other surgical procedures, but basically if you are operating anywhere that's not an appendage, typically you can kind of delve into general surgery. They're the utility right. player of the operating room.
Yes.
But outside of those 30, the other 90 cases, they need to be divided up a minimum of at least 4 surgical specialties. And when we say specialty, we mean something other than general surgery. So cardiovascular, plastics, genitourinary, gynecology, these are just some example, orthopedics. Apologize, how could I forget orthopedics? But there are so many different surgical specialties. You must have cases in at least 4 of those and a minimum of 10 first scrub role within each of those genres of surgery, if you will. So very specific requirements for clinicals. And all of these things are to make sure that you have a well-rounded education while you are supported by these incredible preceptors and your instructors and adjunct instructors and clinical coordinators, but also so that you are then qualified to sit for our certification exam. And we'll come back and we'll talk about our certifying exam and what that looks like here in just a minute. All right, so we're back, everybody. Let's say you are a student in a surgical technology program. You have successfully
passed your lab practical. You are now fully into your clinical surgical rotation, checking off all of those first scrub roles and those different specialties of surgery, if you will. And now you've completed the minimum standard, although I know as an educator, we try to go above and beyond that for our surgical technology students. But once we've done that, now you are eligible to sit for the certification exam. Now, surgical technology is a national certification. It's actually trademarked by the Association of Surgical Technologists, who we'll talk about here in a minute. But AST, we are trademarked as certified surgical technologists. And Stephanie, will you tell our listeners what the difference between a national certification and licensure is? Like, for example, a registered nurse versus a surgical or certified surgical technologist.
For the most part, all of your, when you are nationally certified, you can work in any state. There are some states that have other requirements, such as being registered within the state to work as a surgical tech, but there's no further testing or anything that typically is required. Mm-hmm. Whereas a registered nurse, they are licensed in each individual state. Now, some states will honor the license from another state, but some of them don't, and you have to be licensed in each individual state.
Right. So that's the great part. I was, as a CST, we are military, and I was able to live overseas, and I've worked in many different states. And you have too. You've worked in several states as well as a CST.
Yes.
And so that's been nice. That's one of the great things about the fact that we are CSTs was the flexibility in where we were allowed to work. Not all states in the union, unfortunately, require certification. That's another episode. But being nationally certified definitely gives you kind of a bigger seat at the table and looks really great on a resume and ensures that you are maintaining those skill sets in order to take the very best care of your patient. Because part of certifying or being certified is, of course, passing the big CST exam. And that exam is administered by the National Board of Surgical Technology and Surgical Assisting. But once you are a CST, you must maintain continuing education credits. And Stephanie, I believe it is 30 CEs per 2-year cycle, if I'm correct.
Yes, it used to be on a 4-year cycle, and they changed it to a 2-year cycle to kind of line up with other professions so that, you know, that we all are pretty much in the same type of rotation for those continuing education credits. And so, you have to get 30 continuing education credits within a 2-year cycle. And, you know, some of the fun ways of getting those continuing education credits are to attend state assembly meetings or national conference. You know, these are face-to-face conferences, and you get to interact with other people in the profession. You get to network. Mm-hmm. You would be amazed at job opportunities that open up when you go to these conferences. I know being a part of the Tennessee State Assembly, when we have our state conference, a lot of times there are employers that will set up tables that will be there to recruit. And that is more predominant right now than ever before. With the next meeting that we have coming up, we have many hospitals that are wanting to come and recruit.
Yes,
and so that gives you the opportunity.
It is.
And it gives you the opportunity to explore different facilities and, you know, opportunities that you might not have even thought existed for you.
Absolutely. And that brings us to our professional organization. So once you are a CST, we are kind of governed by the Association of Surgical Technologists. And this AST is who puts together all of these great conferences. In fact, our next conference for national is being held in New Orleans, Louisiana, and that is June 2nd through 4th. of this coming year. So if you haven't registered for that, please do. You can definitely meet me and Stephanie. We will be there along with all of our colleagues learning and kind of soaking it all in right with you. But so now you've graduated, you're CST, you've passed that exam, and you are ready to go take care of patients. And that leads us to the various different areas that you can actually work as a certified surgical technologist. So, you know, sterile technique is needed for every procedure that we do. And so patients are operated not just in our big level one trauma centers. We have so many other facets where we can find employment. Within the actual hospital, there are endoscopy units where if you get a diagnostic scope that you need, we have CSTs for that. Labor and delivery is another area. And then, of course, the main OR. And then within the actual hospital is day surgery as well. Day surgery, what's the difference between the main OR and day surgery, Stephanie?
Day surgery is typically going to do smaller cases that do not require overnight stays in the hospital.
Ah, so like, for instance, I don't know, there's so many scopes that we do. If anybody has had their knee and a bone spur, maybe that's being yes. ornery.
Yes, and even cervical fusions.
Yes, absolutely.
They can be done in day surgery. Those are, you know, you would think of that as a big case, but they're being done. Total knees are being done yes. with the right patient. Right. It depends on other health issues that the patient may have, but
yeah,
they're even doing those. Hip replacements and different surgeries like that are being done in day surgery now.
That's right. And then also we have some surgeons that run their own kind of day surgery unit, if you will, or surgical procedures out of their offices.
Correct.
So I've had graduates that have worked for a plastic surgeon as a personal scrub and have done in office procedures, if you will, as well. And yeah. So there are so many variety of, I guess, professions that we can, or maybe not professions, facilities. There we go.
Facilities,
as a profession.
Yes.
Thank you. Some days words are hard, Ms. Austin. Yes. Especially when you're being recorded on a podcast.
This is true. Very true.
But there is a huge variety of facilities, hours, and call, and all of those things that we can do as a certified surgical technologist. And we're going to take just a little bit of a break and then talk about what it is that a day in the life of a CST actually looks like. All right, Stephanie. So we've talked a lot about the different facilities that we are able to utilize as a CST. So let's really just kind of get into what a day in the life looks like. Surgery happens 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So not day shift isn't the only option. Many people work from 6:30 to 3, Monday through Friday. But there are also not just 8-hour shifts, but 10-hour shifts. There are 12-hour shifts, depending upon which facility you work at. These options may be available to you, which is great for those of us, you know, who have children or, you know, are also continuing to go to school. There are so many options out there, right?
Yes, there are definitely many, many different options. And you know, depending on the facility, you may work 3 to 11 or 7 to 7 at night.
Yes.
Not all facilities have staff 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Usually those are your trauma centers or your bigger hospitals. And then your smaller hospitals, your what you would call like a regional medical center, mm-hmm. a lot of those will have first and second shift, and then they will have call teams.
And what is that? I know we hear a lot about it, especially if you watch the medical shows on TV. People talk about call, but let's give people a realistic kind of expectation about what that looks like.
Okay, so what call looks like, and this too depends on your facility. You have to live within a 30-minute window or be within a 30-minute window of the hospital.
Right.
And so in other words, it may be 3 o'clock in the morning, your phone is going to ring and they're going to tell you you have a case. You have to jump up, brush the teeth, throw the clothes
sometimes.
On. Yes, sometimes. Sometimes you don't have time.
That's why we wear a mask in the OR. So
exactly.
I'm just kidding.
And you just thought it was for infection control.
It's for coffee breath control.
It is. But no, you'll get to the hospital, you know, in the middle of the night and operate. And you never know what you're coming into a lot of times, you know, because these are emergency situations. They're, you know, potential trauma. You know, they're not planned cases. We'll say it that way.
So and usually it's loss, it's potential loss of life, limb, or sight.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, so typically.
Typically.
Right.
Yeah, we won't tell them all the things.
No, we won't tell them all the things. And and again, not all facilities are open on the weekend.
That's true.
For regular cases. And there again, you know, some hospitals do have staff on the weekends. Others do not. They have call teams that are available all weekend. So you may be on call at night. You may be on call on the weekend. Oh, and guess what? You may be on call Christmas Day.
Especially if you're low man on the totem pole.
Yes.
And it's important to say, so we as CSTs are employees of the hospital. Most of the time, unless we specifically work for a surgeon, as I mentioned, for example, a plastic surgeon who does in-office procedures.
Correct.
That being said, we are normally hourly employees, so we make an hourly wage for our regular shift. This hourly wage varies as a, you know, dependent upon the facility that you work at, and of course the region of the United States that we work in. Some areas are paying higher than others, another podcast. But
definitely another podcast.
Yes. But once you are working outside of that normal shift, Monday through Friday, six mm-hmm. to three-ish, for example, mm-hmm. if you are on call, you get what we call shift differential, which means that we're call pay. So it's extra money on top of what your regular hourly wage would be for those hours worked in a what we would call non-day shift realm. So for instance, if you worked from 3 to 11, you would have your base pay, but then you might have $1 to $2 to $3 more per hour for the 3 to 11 shift. It gets correct. Even more, I guess, lucrative if you work deep nights, so 11 p.m. to 7 a.m., or then again, if you work weekends,
right,
weekend nights. And then call pay, usually you are, you're given some sort of monetary, I guess, pay if you just are on call, meaning
right.
that you are on alert. And agree that during this specific time frame, you will be at the hospital within 30 minutes to for an emergency surgery. If you are brought in during call, then that typically is time and a half.
Yes, correct? Most of the time.
Yeah,
that too depends on the facility. Mm-hmm. I have worked in facilities before that you physically had to work those 40 hours before they would give you time and a half.
What?
So. But a lot of that, even the facility that I worked in that did that, a lot of that has gone away, and pretty much everywhere that I have spoken with,
right.
it is time and a half if you get called back in.
Yeah. And I think that something that people maybe don't understand from the movies or whatever is call, you know, well in advance of when you are on call.
Yes.
It's not as good TV if you knew that next Saturday between the hours of 11 a and 11 p you're on call. And
right.
so literally what we do when we're on call is we hang out at the house. I fold laundry. You know, you're ready to go at a moment's notice. But you
do not sleep very well when you're on call.
No, you don't.
Because
absolutely.
You are terrified you're going to miss the phone call.
Yes, absolutely. Missing right. a call, phone call is very, very bad. But
yes,
I think that, you know, good TV is I'm in the middle of a hot date and I'm in my heels and a gorgeous outfit and my phone rings and, oh no, I've got to go right then. No. Well in advance when your call time is. You also have say typically in when it's scheduled. So there is some negotiation there. It's not as dramatic, I think, as some people who aren't in medicine may think. But call is one of those things that just comes with the job. And it's a great way to kind of get extra pay if you need it. And it is negotiable. And then, of course, varies from facility to facility. But let's say that, you know, we know all of kind of the big picture things, but let's just kind of talk them through what a normal day looks like. Because regardless of what day of the week it is or what shift, many times it kind of looks the same, right?
It does. It does.
So we start the day out with what we call our huddle. So most of the time you must be at the hospital ready to go, and being ready to go for a huddle in it's a little more in detailed than just pulling up into the employee parking and clocking in, isn't it, Stephanie?
Right.
Like what is being ready for your day look like for a CST?
Well, when we talk about being ready for the huddle, you have to come in and, as Chris said, you're going to clock in, mm-hmm. then you're going to get your scrubs because you have to wear hospital laundered scrubs.
And why is that?
Because we can carry in infection. We can carry in germs on our personal clothing. Mm-hmm. I have a chocolate lab at home. I could have dog hair on my clothes. Damn, you know, there are a ton of things.
Absolutely. Peanut butter. We have peanut butter and jelly sandwiches that we made for the kids. You know, we have things just that when you touch, you know, the operating rooms typically on the second floor, kind of in the center of the hospital, so that anyone from the emergency department can get to us quickly, from the helicopter pad, if you're at a trauma center, can get to you, labor and delivery.
Right.
We're kind of a central area of the hospital. And to get to the surgical services department, you're going through other areas of the hospital
right.
with contagious patients.
Exactly.
You know, we've seen that through COVID.
Oh yeah.
Now, you know, general public is wearing their masks everywhere in the hospital.
Right.
But prior to this pandemic, that was not the case. So
right.
it's important that we don't bring, remember, souvenirs are bad.
So souvenirs are bad.
Exactly. So we don't want to bring any of the germs or contagions that we get from that external environment. And then, of course, from the other departments of the hospital into our operating room.
Exactly.
And so you have to be in surgical scrubs, but also uh-huh. to be within that restricted area. What else should we have on?
We always should have on a hairnet.
Yes.
And shoe covers.
Yes.
And that just keeps us from carrying things in on our shoes. If we were to leave the department and come back, we yeah. always change our shoe covers just to make sure that we're not carrying anything in from the outside.
Yes. And just like Sammy, the beautiful chocolate lab,
yes.
I too shed like crazy. And so Lord knows I don't want my hair inside this of my patient or onto
exactly.
my sterile instruments. So yeah, so we have to look a certain way. It is very strict. And as you now learned, there's a really good reason for that.
Yes,
there is. And then we get to huddle. And huddle is kind of like the pre-shift meeting. So anyone who is working in that shift will gather around. You find out what your room assignment is. You find out if there are any special instances or cases going on. Maybe equipment that's down or special equipment that is needed. I don't know. And can you think of anything right off that I haven't mentioned, Stephanie, that goes on in huddle?
No, that sounds about, you know, that sounds about right. It puts you in mind of, for those of you that watch sports, of a huddle during a football game.
Yes.
You know, they're getting their game plan together. They're getting, you know, making sure that everybody knows who is there and who's not there. And, you know, because somebody may have called in sick.
Yeah.
And they may be in your room, and that's something that you need to know, that, you know, you may have a different person with you, or you may have to fly solo that day, you know, which puts a lot more, those are rough days, but it puts a lot more pressure on you when you have to do that. But those are things that you're going to learn in huddle.
That's true. And so once you have your assignment, surgical technologists are assigned to an operating room for the day. So, you know, different size hospitals have more, you know, some hospitals have 30 operating rooms, some have 4. But whatever hospital OR you're assigned to that day, your job is to scrub, right? All of the surgical procedures that are happening within your operating room during your shift. And those can vary. It's not always a laparoscopic cholecystectomy, which people may know as a minimally invasive removal of their gallbladder. We do those in our sleep, right? But
yes,
it can depend. Your operating room, you could have a general surgeon that's going to do 3 or 4 removals of a gallbladder. And then you can turn around and have an orthopedic surgeon who's going to fix a fracture. Then you can turn around and have, you know, not just a fracture, but that same orthopedic surgeon is then going to scope a shoulder, which is one of the coolest parts about what we do for a living as a surgical technologist, because you never know what's going to roll in the door and you never have a dull moment, right? One case
absolutely
is going to be completely different from the next one, and so forth and so on.
Yeah, there's two things I've always said about the OR.
Yes.
No 2 days are ever the same.
Absolutely.
And when you walk into the OR and those double doors shut, you don't have a life. You don't think about what bills need to be paid or any of the stresses that you have in your personal life. When those double doors shut, you're a surgical technologist, and it's all about the patient.
And we're going to talk here in a minute about the traits that make a really great surgical technologist, because you may not think that you have what it takes to be a CST. And both of us are educators, and we can completely tell you that we have, we would beg to differ.
Isn't that right? Yes, absolutely.
So part of what we get our room assignment, and then our job at the beginning of the day is to make sure that we have everything that we might need for not just the first case of the day, but for every single other case that is what we call scheduled or to follow.
Yes.
Because in the operating room, we have to go quickly. So we want to take those few moments that we have in the morning, because we got there early and on time, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. Always. Yes,
because we want to make sure that we have everything that we need, whether it's instruments that we're going to use that are sterile, certain supplies, equipment, or actual tables and certain trays and things that we have in the operating room as well. And it's not just us. It's a team sport, if you will.
It is.
Right? So we can't just be the quarterback, because I'm a CST, I'm going to be the quarterback, right? We can't be the quarterback unless we have a receiver to throw to.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
All right. So it takes a team to be able to care for our patients. So you are checking on your supplies and instrumentation that you might need, but you're also communicating very effectively with the other people that play a role in the operating room. And that is your circulator, that's typically a registered nurse, your anesthesia provider, if you get lucky enough to get another CST in the room, then awesome. Your teammate for the day, and then your patient care techs, your equipment techs, anesthesia techs. There are so many people that work together in the operating room behind the scenes to ensure that our patients are really well taken care of.
And a big shout out to one of those ancillary departments that we depend on every single day, sterile processing department.
Absolutely.
That are turning over those trays, because there are some days that you're going to have more cases than you have trays. Mm-hmm. And you're going to have some real communication with them to ensure that those trays are getting turned over.
Absolutely. And when we say trays, basically that is a shopping cart full of instruments that are sterile. And it doesn't matter how wonderful our sterile technique is, if those instruments aren't sterile to begin with, then there isn't any technique in the world that's going to prevent an infection happening in your patient. So absolutely, our sterile processing departments, our anesthesia techs, our patient care techs, our registered nurses, we all work together to ensure that our patients are cared for. And then after that, it's time to get rolling, use that sterile technique, gown and glove. You've heard me say we're the ninjas of the operating. It's because we're covered in blue. Our mask, it covers most of our face. Our bonnet covers our hair. Our eye protection covers our eyes. Nobody knows who the heck we are.
and even if they did, they're not going to remember it because when the patients come to the room, they've been given Versed and it's an amniotic. And so they're not going to remember us. Yes. They're not going to, we'll introduce ourselves, but.
Absolutely.
You're not going to remember.
No.
And so, that's what makes us ninjas because nobody knows who we are.
Nobody knows. We're like stealth. Absolutely.
Exactly.
But once we have set up the case using sterile technique, as we've mentioned before, we help properly gown and glove our surgical team so that they also maintain sterility. We drape our patient with our sterile drapes so that we are covering any part of their body that we are not operating on. And then we actually, after a timeout, the timeout is kind of the big pause, right? It's the coin flip at the beginning of the game. It's making sure that we all understand the rules. We have the correct patient, the correct procedure, the correct incision site,
The correct doctor.
We also are all aware of any allergies that the patient may have, any medications that are on both our table as a CST or are being given to the patient by the anesthesia team. There is a huge kind of checkoff list, if you will, of things that we make sure are correct and being done properly for our patient prior to making any incision.
Exactly.
And then we assist in performing the surgery. So we're passing instrumentation, sharp, suture. As Stephanie mentioned, we're constantly counting and keeping track of everything that we have, and a really great communication with the surgeon. And that kind of will lead us to, the segue into what it takes to be a surgical technologist, because once you've assisted in the surgery, once we have done all of our closing counts, we've sutured up our patient, we've applied dressings in a sterile fashion, that particular case is over, then we assist the patient in moving them to their stretcher. But here's the kicker, is that the registered nurse, the anesthesia provider, they go with the patient to our recovery unit, but we don't. We stay in the OR because we are getting ready for that next case. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. We are getting all of the dirty instruments that we just used out of the room. We are helping if you have housekeepers that come in and help clean your room, or if you do it yourself, either way, the room has to be cleaned. And then you bring your next case in and here we go.
And we go right back to it again. And as we've said already, one case, your first case could be completely different from your second or third. And even if it is the same procedure, just because it is a different patient, that makes it a completely different ballgame.
Yes.
We have to be ready for anything. And so we're going to take just a short break and then we're going to come back and wrap it all up with what are the attributes of a really amazing certified surgical technologist. All right, so now those of you listening, you have a pretty good idea of, in generalities, but what a day in the life of a certified surgical technologist looks like. And you've seen that there's a variety throughout your day of not just job duties, but also just experiences. You know, one surgical procedure could go hours and hours. I used to deliver transplants, and when we first started, gosh, our transplants could last up to 12 or 14 hours.
Wow.
But then also we've done laparoscopic cholecystectomies. We've talked about that. I've seen one in and out in 30 minutes, haven't you?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yes.
Or total knee replacements that would take 3 or 4 hours, and then a doctor that's out in 86 minutes.
Yes, absolutely. You know. So the patient, comorbidities, the surgeon, the technique, all of these things are kind of matter in differing cases that we do throughout the day. So what does it take to be an amazing certified surgical technologist? And I think we're going to start with kind of what you've already spoken about a little bit. And that is, no matter what is happening in our world, we are patient focused, we are patient minded, and we are no longer the center of attention when those OR doors close.
No, when those OR doors close, we are the patient advocate.
Absolutely.
That patient cannot protect themselves. They are asleep. Yes. And so our job is to ensure that they are respected and that they are taken care of to the best of our ability to ensure a positive, successful outcome for the patient.
Absolutely. And so part of what we do is not just to maintain sterile technique ourselves and to constantly be focused on the patient, but we must advocate for that patient, meaning that if we do see a break in sterile technique, if we do see something that's not going right, it is our responsibility to say something.
Yes.
You see something, you say something, and we fix it.
Yes.
You cannot be a wallflower in an operating room.
Right.
Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so let's talk about the general daily requirements. Gosh, we are juggling a million things at once, and we must be organized the entire time.
Absolutely.
Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah. Yeah. There, because, you know, anesthesia is typically the most dangerous part of surgery.
Yeah.
And so the longer a patient is under anesthesia, the greater danger, and I use that word loosely, but you know, the higher risk the surgical procedure becomes. And so the quicker we can get the patient through surgery and back out of anesthesia, the better their outcome is going to be.
Absolutely. And I would, and so being organized, being efficient,
yes.
Having what we call efficiency of movement,
right.
All of these things are incredibly important. Also, surgery is done standing up. Our patient gets to lay down, right? The rest of us are standing the entire time.
Exactly.
So you have to be able to be on your feet for many yes. hours of the day.
Right.
You also have to be able to lift a certain amount of weight. I would say at least 20, if not at least 40 pounds. You have to be able to move. Your patient will not help you.
Right.
Come
They're
to me.
Asleep.
They are
yeah.
asleep. Yeah.
They are asleep.
Absolutely. And I also think that one of the things we do is we always have to kind of anticipate what that surgeon is going to need. So you have to have a strong background in anatomy and physiology. We have to know that procedure almost as well as the surgeon does in order to decrease that time, that window that we're operating, also to be able to work quickly and effectively when something is not going well.
Exactly.
If our patient's bleeding, our surgeon does not have time to explain to us where a particular instrument is or clamp and what that particular surgeon needs in order to stop the bleed. These are skills that we have to have already.
Yeah. And one thing that people don't always think about, you know, they think, oh, well, you're just a tech and you're just going to pass the instruments. And yeah, those are fighting words.
Mm-hmm.
But, if you think about it from a different perspective, for instance, the hospital I worked in, we had 13 orthopedic surgeons and I specialized in orthopedics. So we had 13 different surgeons, and let's just say that each of those 13 surgeons did 10 different types of cases, okay? Yeah. All 13 of those doctors are not going to do that procedure the same way. They're not going to use the same equipment. Mm-hmm. They're not going to, you know, use the, they're not going to do it in the same order. And because of all of that, as a surgical technologist, I don't have to learn those 10 procedures. I have to learn those 10 procedures times 13. That's 130 procedures that I have to know to be able to anticipate the needs of the surgeon or to ensure that I have what that surgeon needs. For another podcast, doctor's preference cards are all not always correct.
That's true.
And the experience that you have with your doctors, if you pay attention and you learn each step that that doctor does, you're going to be able to ensure that you have everything that they need, which makes the procedure more efficient and makes for a happier doctor. And that is an actual good goal to have.
Yes, absolutely. And so there are a lot of things. And I will say, you know, if you're thinking and, you know, gosh, this might be something I want to do, but you're listening to all the things that we are telling you and you have those little doubts creep in, please don't, because we have seen people who are incredibly book smart and test well, that when they got to the skills portion of their educational journey, they did not translate that well.
No.
And then we've had students who were maybe not very good test takers, but when it came to the hands-on portion, they rocked it.
Yes.
We've also had students that are of all different age groups and socioeconomic backgrounds. And, you know, I've had people that this was their second, third, fourth career field. They were never in medicine. They had never stepped foot in a hospital, and yet were successful and found that love and that drive for this profession.
And one of the questions that I'm asked a lot is, am I too old to do this job?
We've seen that on social media lately, haven't we?
Yes, yes. Yeah. More than once on social media lately. And my answer to that is, I was 33 when I became a tech. I am currently, and I don't care to say it, I am currently 50 and I am going to school right now. You are never, ever too old to go back to school, ever.
We have also had, I've had people that were a waitress. I've had someone who was a barista at Starbucks. I have had moms come in, single parents, single dads, people with military backgrounds, people straight out of high school. And I will say, all of those life experiences can only help you. If you have ever had to multitask a day in your life, you can do this job.
You can do this job.
If you've ever had to work shift work and understand how to work when you're sleep deprived, you can do this job. And also, gosh, if you are passionate about being in a position as noble and as honorable, you are with patients that are having the worst day of their life. And it is an honor to serve them. It is an honor to be a part of this team, and to care for our patients. And if you are a servant leader, if you are someone who wants to be there to help someone in their darkest times, you can do this job.
Absolutely.
Yes.
There is nothing that helps you sleep better at night than knowing when you went to work that you made a difference in somebody's life, that you took a bad situation and made it better for them.
Absolutely. And to kind of summarize it, all of these things make up what we all call your surgical conscience. So it is the highest integrity. It is your promise and commitment to every patient, whether that patient is homeless or a VIP or a criminal or is in a motor vehicle accident, or is having elective surgery. It does not matter. You have made a commitment to do the right thing every single moment, no matter who is watching, no matter who is not watching, and that if you do have a break-in technique, if you do drop something or contaminate, that you will immediately stop what you are doing, say something, and correct it. It is about doing the right thing all the time, regardless of who is there, who's not there, and who your patient is.
Exactly.
You have that, you are going to have a very successful and very rewarding career as a certified surgical technologist.
Yeah. Yes, yes, you will.
Absolutely. So part of, just to summarize this entire podcast, AST has given out a career video that has a wonderful kind of summation of not just what we do in an operating room, but all the members of the OR team. And we are sharing that with you to conclude this particular podcast. So it's about 6 minutes long. If you want to listen to the whole thing, if you just want to kind of bookmark this for sharing of this episode in the future or at different career fairs, please pardon the fact that I can't speak to that. We have so many different avenues that you can use this, and we really encourage you to do that. So without further ado, we are going to share the AST, which is the Association of Surgical Technologists, career video. This audio is great. Shout out to Concord College and the remarkable way that they assisted AST in creating this video. And so let's get it started.
And you're going to have the audio portion of it, but if you would like a copy with the video portion, please just check our website at the podcast, at the Scrub Life, I'm sorry, the Scrub Life podcast. .com.
Absolutely. So all of that along with other links are listed, and we'll give you kind of a summary of that here in a minute. So here you go. Here's AST's career video on surgical technology.
Would you like to be a key member of the surgical team responsible for assisting the surgeon in providing safe surgical care to patients? We invite you to learn about the surgical technology profession and discover how you can make a difference in the life of a patient. The surgical team is divided between two roles, non-sterile and sterile. The non-sterile individuals are the circulator and the anesthesia professional. The sterile duties are performed by the surgeon and the certified surgical technologist, or CST. The circulator is a registered nurse, or RN, who is responsible for providing support to the sterile team members and anesthesia professional during the surgical procedure, such as performing the patient's skin prep, connecting cords to the machines, completing various documents including operative record, and applying sterile surgical dressings. The anesthesia professional is either a physician or a certified registered nurse anesthetist. Responsibilities of the anesthesia professional include administering anesthetics and drugs and monitoring the patient's vital signs. The surgeon is responsible for carrying out the surgical procedure. He or she is responsible for all the actions of the surgical team during the procedure. The surgeon may be a medical doctor, or MD, doctor of osteopathy, or DO, doctor of podiatric medicine, or DPM. CSTs are an important member of the surgical team who work closely with the surgeon under his or her delegatory authority and supervision. Surgeons rely on CSTs to be able to think like the surgeon in order to anticipate their needs during procedures. The skilled CST demonstrates a caring attitude towards the patient and surgical team members. This includes being an effective member of the team and communicating efficiently. They understand detailed anatomy and physiology, the pathological condition affecting the patient, and the planned surgical procedure. CSTs are skilled in the practice of sterile technique to preserve the sterile field to protect the patient from acquiring a surgical site infection. The primary role of the CST is called the first scrub role. It involves the three phases of surgical patient care: preoperative, intraoperative and postoperative case management. Preoperative duties include performing the surgical scrub and donning the gown and gloves, preparing the sterile equipment, instruments, and supplies, performing counts, and assisting the surgeon in placing the drapes. The intraoperative phase of the procedure includes passing instruments and supplies to the surgeon, passing tissue specimens to the circulator, passing suture to the surgeon, and assisting in applying sterile dressings. The last phase of surgery, postoperative case management, involves preparing the equipment and instruments for transport out of the OR and assisting the circulator prepare for the next procedure. Surgical technology students complete an accredited surgical technology program and earn an associate degree upon graduation. Some of the coursework includes anatomy, physiology, and pharmacology, surgical instrumentation and equipment, and patient care concepts. Learning occurs in the classroom, mock operating room, and surgical rotation. The National Certification Examination is administered by the National Board of Surgical Technology and Surgical Assisting, or NBSTSA. Upon passing the exam, the individual is allowed to place the CST credential after their name. The certification cycle is for 2 years. There are states such as Indiana, New Jersey, South Carolina, and Texas that require graduation from an accredited program and the CST credential. Additionally, many employers require the CST credential. The job outlook for surgical technology is very positive. The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics reports that surgical technology is projected to grow faster than the average for all occupations. The primary area of employment for CSTs is in the operating room. Other employment options include team leader for surgical specialties, traveling CST, healthcare sales representative, and surgical technology program educator. The Association of Surgical Technologists, or AST, is the professional organization for surgical technologists. AST supports program accreditation, national certification, and continuing education. AST member benefits include student membership in the AST Student Association, discounted registration fee for the national conference, access to online continuing education and professional resources, and the AST monthly journal, The Surgical Technologist. Most importantly, members serve as an advocate promoting the profession by attending state assembly meetings, involvement in state legislative activities, and serving on state and national level committees and boards. We encourage students to become involved in the profession and AST while attending the program and after graduation. If you need additional information, please visit the AST website, AST.org, or call us at 800-637-7433. AST wishes to thank Concord Career College for their support in the production of this video.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Scrub Life podcast. If you like what you hear, please subscribe and share. We can be found on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at the Scrub Life Podcast. Show notes for this episode, as well as past episodes, our contact information, and the virtual suggestion box can be found at our webpage, thescrublifepodcast.com. This has been Chris Blevins and Stephanie Austin with the Scrub Life Podcast. Until next time, be safe, support each other, and stay sterile.